Welcome to Season 3 of the Hope Motivates Action podcast. I am your host, Lindsay Recknell. In this week's episode, you'll meet Kim Forrester, a New Zealander living in Singapore, and the host of the Eudaimonia podcast. I met Kim when she Googled me. Well, okay, she Googled expert in hope and I popped up. I had the honor of being on her podcast, and she's returning the honor to be with us here today. In this episode, Kim shares how she used hope to sustain her through 6 intercontinental moves and build a thriving life wherever she's landed. Kim activates her hope every time she finds her well-being lower than she wants it to be, and she shares how she takes action to move herself towards a future better than today. If you're interested in any of the books, resources, and tools I mentioned in this episode, all the links you'll need can be found in the show notes of your favorite podcast player, or head to the blog and pod page of my website at expertinhope.com and you'll find them all there too. I truly believe that the future will be better than today by taking action over the things we can control. And conversations like this really reinforce that hope. So without any more delay, let's get to it. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another awesome edition of the Hope Motivates Action podcast. I am your host, Lindsay Recknell, and it is my absolute pleasure to introduce you to my new friend, Kim Forrester. Welcome, Kim.
Oh, Lindsay, it's such a delight to be here with you. Thanks so much for inviting me on.
I just love how you and I got connected. I was a guest on Kim's podcast, which is the Eudaimonia podcast. I will absolutely put the link to her podcast in the show notes, but you definitely check it out. And not just because I'm a featured guest. But Kim told me the story of how she Googled expert in hope and I came up. She had been looking for someone to speak about hope. And I just love that we got to make that connection and that you can speak about the impact of hope on your life now here with us.
Yeah, it sounds like a great swap. And I love the way that I used those exact words, expert in hope, and you popped up top of the page.
How's that for some SEO on my website, huh?
Love it.
So for those of you who don't know Kim yet, she is a mother, a nature lover, a holistic well-being advocate, and my favorite, she is a kindness enthusiast. She's also an award-winning author, educator, and consultant. And she combines cutting-edge science with spiritual philosophy, which inspires holistic well-being and fullness of living. Kim was born in New Zealand, and after living in several countries, which we'll hear more about very soon, she is now living in Singapore. So thank you so much, Kim. We would love to hear more of your story and how you have used hope to motivate action in your life.
Sure. Well, reflecting back on my life now, I can see that hope has actually become deeply entwined with who I am as a person. I had an interesting childhood. My father left when I was 7, and then I had a stepfather move in, and there was a lot of conflict in that relationship. So I can see, looking back on my childhood, that there was something inspirational inside of me that carried me through those years. You know, it was pretty tough emotionally through my childhood. And yet, maybe it's the innocence of youth, but I absolutely never wavered from the idea that all was well, all is well, all's going to be okay. And it's interesting because I know that hope for you is about taking action. And it's really interesting to reflect back and think that as a child, there were very few actions I could actually take in terms of changing the circumstances that I was in. And yet, I obviously did some things. There must have been some things under my control as a child that allowed me to pop out the other end, not totally unscathed, but certainly still an optimistic, vibrant, and hopeful human being. Certainly another story, you know, that we can sort of delve into in terms of the way I use hope is the way that I have used hope to integrate into all the different countries and cities that I've lived in. So I've moved, in the last 20 years, I've moved 6 cities or countries. So it's actually been 5 different countries and 6 different cities. And it's a really tough adventure to go through when you literally dismantle an entire life. And I know that you went across to the West Coast, correct, Lindsay? So you understand this concept.
Yes, the integrating into community, I don't think, I mean, absolutely makes it harder when it's really far away, but absolutely has implications even, you know, in a new community.
Yeah. So moving city can be tough enough because you kind of dismantle your support systems and, you know, your home and all those sorts of things, and you have to pack up and schlep across the country. Moving country, and I'm sure some of your listeners would have experienced this, you literally dismantle your life. So you dismantle your bank accounts go, your social security numbers and your personal ID numbers, they all go. Everything disappears. And then you go to a new country and you literally rebuild a life again. And I can see, you know, talking to you now, that hope has absolutely played an integral role in how I've done this five times. Actually, six times. When I was a teenager, I went to Denmark as an exchange student. So, you know, that was another opportunity for me to recreate my life. But I think that hope now is, and I feel blessed in this way, because hope never leaves me. Even in my late teens and, you know, I fell into a deep depression, I know that I'm fortunate. I know that I am blessed in that hope didn't leave me even in those darkest moments. And I know that the moment I land in a country, I activate hope without even consciously doing so. I think I've leaned into hope so often in the past, and I've taken the actions and the activities that are necessary for me to build a thriving life in each of these different locations, that it has now become absolutely automatic for me. And I feel blessed, and I feel incredibly grateful to be able to say that.
One of the things that I've learned in my research is that people have varying hope levels. And hearing you speak, you clearly are starting from a baseline of very high hope. You know, I love that. I love that it's automatic and it's unconscious, and you just, I love that you activate it when you get into these new situations. But also not to say that because you have high hope, you haven't also experienced adversity and felt depression and recognized when your well-being wasn't where it wanted to be. And I think that's an important conversation as well, because so often we look at people who are hopeful, who are optimistic, who seem to achieve great things, and we think, well, you clearly haven't been through what I've been through, so how could you possibly even know what I'm talking about? But your lived experiences proves that regardless of how high our hope starts, it fluctuates for us as well.
Yeah, I sort of think back as you were talking there, I was thinking back to the days where I would eat a pottle of yogurt in a day. You know, I was deeply, deeply depressed. I wouldn't get out of bed all day, and I was smoking cigarettes instead of eating. I was in a really, really low place. But even when I reflect back now on those moments, there was a spark inside of me that kept me moving forward. So I'm not sure I could have articulated at the time what that little spark was inside of me. But, you know, having met you and spoken to you, I can see that it was hope. I still had hope that somehow life was going to be better. And I wish I could bottle it. You know, it's all well and good for me. I realize I'm sitting here going, oh, you know what? I was in the depths of depression, but I never lost hope. And I am aware that not everyone has that luxury. And I wish that I had the answer. I wish I had the answer so that we could just take everything that I felt and still feel today. You know, it certainly shines a lot brighter today than it did 20 odd years ago. But if we could just bottle that and give it to people. Mm-hmm. And even as I say that, I'm thinking, maybe in spite of everything I'd experienced as a child and everything I was going through, I wonder if it came down to the fact that somehow I still believed I was worthy.
How powerful is that?
I was worthy of life. I was worthy of a good life. And perhaps there's a link in there somewhere. People who have hope have an understanding that they are worthy of something better than whatever's presenting itself to them in the moment.
I like that connection a lot, because I really believe that hope never is gone, that it's often just hiding, right? It's down deep. And I feel like when we get into those more hopeless sort of moments of despair, often that also translates into our not feeling worthy, our not feeling like, you know, we have anything to live for, maybe at the extreme ends, or, you know, that our future isn't, how can it possibly be better than it is today? You just can't see through that murkiness, so to speak. But I think that, you know, a tool or hearing that we are worthy, that we are worth it, that, you know, our life and the tomorrow is really important. That's one of those life rafts, those, you know, lifesavers that you can hold on to help pull you out of that hole. To, you know, that is like a, I don't know how to say, but a path to hope, so to speak.
It's interesting there that you talk about, you know, people losing hope and wanting to take their life at the extreme, you know, a tragic extreme. But I would say also, Lindsay, that people who choose to remain alive but choose not to live, that's also, you know, it's a terrible tragedy. And often that's because I think people forget that they are worthy of more. They forget to activate hope so they can, you know, stay in the same job or stay in the same place, not because it serves them to do so, but simply because they have forgotten to understand that they are worthy of an amazing life, you know, a thriving life.
How, in your, I mean, in your professional work, in the conversations you've had with people, what's your best advice on how people can activate that hope when they aren't feeling awesome?
I think one of the most profound things, and probably one of the most common things that I sort of inspire or hope to encourage people to do, is to reconnect with themselves as natural spiritual beings, right? To go a little bit deeper. My concern, Lindsay, is that, you know, 300-400 years ago, science took a very decidedly sort of materialistic turn. And quite literally at the time, we all got turned into machines. Everything in the universe got turned into a machine. We have to, you know, look back at Isaac Newton's physics, for instance, and Descartes' theory of the mind, excuse me, which kind of underpins all of our modern psychology, well, at least until recently. At the time that these gentlemen were sort of producing these groundbreaking ideas, it was also the Industrial Revolution. So machines and machinery and engineering was revered. It was regarded as the greatest thing that humanity had ever produced. So the thinking of the day sort of turned very machine-like and very mechanical. Quite literally, the universe got turned into a clock. And we became machines with skin on. And animals were animatrons. They literally, that's why, you know, there's a widespread sort of misconception, in my view, that animals don't have an essence or a soul. They are just, you know, a machine with fur or feathers on. And I feel that that turn that we made as a culture, as a humanity, is it's deeply disturbing, because what it has actually done, it has disconnected us from the deepest essence of who we are. And that deepest essence of who we are is attached to the fact that we are made from stardust. Quite literally, we are made from, the atoms that make up our body are created from particles that blew out of supernovas billions of years ago. We are formed from the same basic elements, from, you know, oxygen and carbon and phosphorus. Those same elements are in the earth and in nature around us. We are not sort of in the universe. We are of the universe. We are the most amazing, incredible, inspiring, miraculous creatures. And for me, my greatest inspiration, my greatest advancement, my greatest exploration of life as a human being has come after I reconnected with that. And that's what I'd love for people to understand. That sense of being worthy, that sense of deserving more, that sense of even demanding more from your life through the activation of hope, that comes from the understanding that you're a freaking miracle. And why would you not be hopeful about the future? Why would you not go out and actively create more for yourself so that life is not just okay, but that it's fascinating?
I am just sitting here gritting ear to ear. I can't even, like your passion and love and motivation for what you believe in your soul is so... I have no words, which is very rare for me. I have no words. But I just love your perspective because it is about being bigger than ourselves, right? It is like at the absolute macro level, way bigger than ourselves. And we are this, like you say, this magical stardust created creature that gets to do all of these awesome things. We use our curiosity to connect, to learn, to experience. I mean, how powerful is that?
Yeah. As Carl Sagan said, we are a way for the universe to know itself. And that is the point. We are literally all made of the universe, but we get to observe each other. And we get to experience our own life, and we get to observe the experiences of others. Once we can reconnect with that understanding, and it's something that kind of is very easy to disappear, as I say, under the sort of the mechanical science that is slowly starting to dissolve, I must say. You know, in the last 80 years with quantum physics, people are starting to go, oh, wow, there's a whole universe at the subatomic level that is really freaky and amazing. But when we can understand that we are here to experience life, that's it. We are here to experience life. And hope, in the way that you engage with it, Lindsay, in the way that you teach it, hope is one of the greatest mechanisms through which we can expand our experience of life and actually do what we're here to do. The other thing that I'd like to put out there as a recovering people pleaser, I know that you'll have listeners who are less concerned about taking care of themselves or having a great life for themselves and perhaps are more focused outward, you know, into being of service to others. And to them, I say, you have a valuable contribution to make to this planet. You know, through your example or literally through the contribution that you make materially or socially in your family. And if you allow hopelessness to creep in and you allow your life to shrink into a sphere that is limited by hopelessness, then the whole world is missing out. Greta Thunberg, an amazing, inspiring example at the moment. So she's gone through life dealing with Asperger's and all of the trials and tribulations and challenges that I imagine that come along from being neurodiverse. If she had chosen, and of course she looks out at the choices that we're making with regards to our own environment and our own planet, and is disturbed about the future that she sees. Now, if she had chosen hopelessness, or even if she'd had a glimmer of hope but chosen not to activate it, we wouldn't have this global uprising, this massive groundswell of support for her and for the strike for climate that's going on. So I'll come back to what I was saying before. She has a contribution to make, and it was only through hope and through activating that hope that she has woken up the world's eyes and compelled action around the world.
And that's the key for me as well, is that is activating what you believe to be true, what you see in the world. Like, because you're right, she absolutely could have chosen to make a minimal impact, right? She could choose to make an impact in her family or at her school or even more broadly, just in her country. But she has activated her hope to influence around the world. And she's not just talking about it, but she's doing the actions. She is doing the things to make the world a better place for her future, right? Her hopeful future. She absolutely has an expectation that the future is going to be better than today. And she's modeling that behavior out loud. And it's and people are rallying around her. Yeah, she is an awesome example of hope. Whether people believe, understand, support any of the initiatives that these inspirational people are out there in the world activating, that's not the point. The point is they're doing the things and
that's
their
right.
future better than today.
Yeah. But see, I'll take it one step further. You were saying that she might have just, you know, kept it small. But my experience or my observations have been that some people choose to just not even do that, that hopelessness. So in Greta's case, I'm sure that she's had some very harsh words spoken at her. You know, she wasn't going to school at some point because of bullying. And it leads me sort of to the understanding that maybe one of the things that we allow to disengage our hope is the words and the thoughts and opinions of others. Because if Greta had listened to other people rather than tapping into that well of hope and empowerment within her, if she had listened to what people tell her about, you know, what it's like to have Asperger's and put her in a containment and, you know, a little container, a box, and you stay there, then she might not have taken action at all.
Well, and I feel like she must have tapped into her intrinsic motivation to do this work, right? She has to be activating hope theory, right? She has a goal to change the world and save it from its environmental destruction. She's employing her agency thinking, her intrinsic motivation to get it done. And when she hits those barriers that are clearly in the way, whether it's from trollers on the internet or bullies at school, you know, and all the things that I can't even imagine what this woman has gone through, this girl has gone through in her crusade, right? And she is activating that pathways thinking to get around that because it's so important. It's so important to her. It's so important to the people around her. She is the epitome of hopeful thinking.
She is the epitome. And I guess for that reason, I think it's important for us also to bring it back and say, well, I'm not saying that everybody on the planet, that all of your listeners need to have an idea or a concept or, you know, a campaign that is as grand as that, because your contribution as a human being doesn't have to be seen by billions of people to be valuable. But I'm hoping that what your listeners can tap into and understand is that they have a contribution to make to someone somewhere that could and will enhance the world in some way, whether that's literally baking birthday cakes, you know, for for the local community, but because they are the most beautifully love imbued birthday cakes that have ever been made in that particular community. Without a sense of hope, then maybe that person won't pick up the baking tins and say, oh, you know, I actually can do this. It doesn't have to be grand to be valuable.
I think that's a really important point. It's scope and scale, right? What matters to us matters, full stop. You know, whether changing the world from the impact of climate change to, you know, putting a smile on someone's face, you know, that just moved into your neighborhood, if it matters to you, it matters. And it's taking action or recognizing that desire, recognizing that motivation that matters. And it is, it's scope and scale. I was thinking earlier as you were speaking that your baseline is as a higher hope human. I mean, it sounds like whether you were born with higher hope or you've learned it along the way, your baseline is of higher hope. but you still fluctuate in your well-being and how you, you know, how you feel day to day. And for other people who are starting with a slightly lower baseline for hope, okay, you know, like there's it's right, wrong, or indifferent. It's just where you start and what you do with it that matters. I really believe that hope can be learned, you know, modeling that behavior out loud and seeing the influence you can have on other people with your actions, with your stories, with your contributions. I think that's the key. How you live that hope out loud is how we change the world.
Yeah. And I guess it comes back to that point of knowing, I guess it comes back to that point of not just believing that you have a brighter future to work towards, you know, or having that why that you talk about in regards to activating hope, but also giving yourself permission to deserve something better. It, like you were saying, it doesn't really matter what level you start at. And I, quite frankly, couldn't tell you. I cannot tell you how hopeful I was as a very young child, for instance. I know that I have a very deep faith in my own ability. I have learned a very deep faith in my own ability to thrive and to and an ability to welcome challenge now when it comes. I welcome challenge. I welcome adversity because I have been through so many of these challenges and over so many hurdles and have summited so many mountains and can recognize that every one of them has made me stronger and more resilient and more hopeful. But it starts, I think, with that understanding of wherever you are on the hope scale, you deserve more. You deserve to be more hopeful. And the people around you, they actually need to see you becoming more hopeful because, as you say, it's contagious, right? And that models that behavior for them. And then they go, oh, I have permission to be more hopeful about the world and about my own life. I feel that our example is probably one of the greatest change agents that we have. So by becoming more hopeful, and I love the way you say that, model that behavior out loud, we are giving other people permission to ask for that, to demand for that in their own lives as well.
Yeah, that permission piece, that self-forgiveness, self-permission piece is so key. It's one of the things I talk about often, actually, with my mental health counselor is, you know, we go through our lives feeling guilty about something or feeling less than or that we haven't lived up to somebody else's expectations. And whether you need to hear that you can give yourself permission or really feel that that it's okay that you have permission to feel the way you do, I think knowing that, understanding that, using that is so, so important. I know you talked about Greta as being someone who, where you have seen hope lately, but I know you have another story of another woman who has modeled hopeful behavior out loud. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. So there's a beautiful young Filipina lady in my life here in Singapore. And it's really quite eye-opening to live in Asia and to see the differences in lifestyles that are present around the world. You know, to first of all, you know, I've been able to see how privileged I was, desperately privileged I was to have been born in New Zealand. So this particular young woman has, like many Filipinas, has been working over here in Singapore for 11 years, and she's been a housekeeper here in Singapore for 11 years. And really interesting there, in a lot of these developing societies, they're not just sort of struggling with a lack of basic healthcare or, you know, proper shelter or all those sorts of things, but there also tends to be a culture of sapping the hope out of others who are hoping to rise, sort of connected with what we were just talking about before. In these sorts of cultures, what I've observed is that this particular young woman, she doesn't just have to give herself permission to have hope, but she has to demand it and tell others, no, I'm going to be hopeful about my life. Because for 11 years, she's been over here, you know, working in other people's homes. She's got two daughters back in the Philippines, and all of her money has been sent back to the Philippines, all of it. And unfortunately, she's sort of been seen as a bit of a cash cow. There's no sort of visibility of what her life is like here over in Singapore. So it's kind of, well, can you send more money? Or I need this and I need this. And so her pattern over the last 11 years is for her to be working incredibly hard and for everything that she earns and everything that she owns to be taken by somebody else. And in the last 6 months, I've watched this young woman with this incredible, go through this incredible transformation in terms of how she views her future, Lindsay. I can see her activating hope, because all of a sudden, the activation of her hope, her first action was to start saying no to people. And that was, it was very, very hard for her to do so. You have an entire cultural history behind that. You have got familial expectations and societal pressures on you in that kind of circumstance. But the first thing she did was she started saying no. And over the last 6 months, I've watched this incredible woman become more empowered in her determination to activate hope. So it started with the no. It started with no, I'm not going to give you money, and I'm not going, certainly not going to go and borrow money to give you money, which is a pattern that's happened in the past. She is now starting to take control of her future back in the Philippines. So rather than just sort of rolling through life, as I was talking before about, you know, living but not actually really creating a life, she is taking very real steps. She's making plans for herself, Lindsay, about the land she's going to buy and the home she's going to build and the schools that her daughters are going to go to in this new life that she's building for herself. And she's not just dreaming about it. She's not wishing about it, as you would say.
Yep.
She's literally starting to implement the steps and the actions that are necessary for her to get there. And just the other day, she was saying that this has come about because she feels more empowered. So I think that was a really interesting sort of link I saw between the activation of her hope and the belief in her that she had the power to do so. After being, you know, her community's and her family's cash cow for 11 years, she has rediscovered her worth and her value as a human being. And she has decided that the hope that she has is reserved purely for her, just for a little while.
Totally okay, right? So often we forget that it's okay to take care of ourselves and set those boundaries and like you say, give ourselves permission to take care of ourselves. That's so important. Mm. What do you think the catalyst was for her change?
I have been mentoring her for a few years, and not necessarily, I'm not going to say it's all about me. I actually said to her, when she said that she feels empowered now, I said, well, it was just simply her having an example to follow. She's been in our lives, and she has seen the way that myself and my husband and my children, we naturally activate hope. And she's also watched me over the last 5 years, you know, recovering from my people pleasing. So, you know, I'm quite happy to put that out there. I feel that we've grown, we've modeled each other through these last 5 years since I've been back here in Singapore. But certainly I think she was given a space away from, I encouraged her to put up some boundaries so that she actually had space to review herself. Because like I was talking before about other people's opinions and other people's words and other people's expectations, I think they can crowd us. So the first step is to literally give yourself the space to sort of go, where do I fit in this? And it was from that space that she just started maybe just allowing the empowerment and the hope that you say is naturally bubbling under the surface, but it came up, it bubbled up, and it filled the space around her rather than other people sort of immediately grabbing that, saying, oh, look, you know, you've earned an extra few hundred dollars this month. That looks hopeful. Let me have that. I think it's the empowerment and the belief that she deserves something better in her life.
And having the behavior modeled out loud that she mm-hmm. can, you know, replicate against. That's awesome. That's very, very cool. Kim, the last question that I always ask all of my guests, and I feel like you've answered this in a number of different ways throughout our conversation, but what gives you hope?
My children.
Mm-hmm.
My children, I know, have been blessed to have lived in several different countries and experienced many different cultures. But I think that they are actually indicative of the younger generation. We're talking about Greta. Greta is but one of the most, you know, of this incredible generation of young adults that are coming through. And my daughter gives me hope because even though she was born into a, you know, into a family with a mother with an overt people pleaser, she is incredibly self-empowered. She does not take rubbish from anyone. And I love that. And I think I see that a lot in the young women coming through today. And others might not see that as much of a, what's the word I'm looking for? Others might not see that necessarily as a virtue. I absolutely do, because I see that empowerment, that sense of I will give to you if and when I have the capacity to do so. You know, you will be a part of what I consider once I have ensured that I'm fully aligned and supported. So my daughter gives me hope in that regard. And my son is just the most phenomenal visionary. Mm-hmm. And like I say, I don't believe that my kids are special. I think that we older people would do ourselves a favor if we would just shut up and listen sometimes, really just shut up and listen to what the young ones are seeing as they come up through our society, where they're looking at the way that we earn money, spend money, deal with the environment, deal with each other, our approach to justice and equality or not. For me, the younger generation have got very clear eyes. And although they might not have the experience to sort of implement the vision that they see for themselves, you know, they might not have the experience, Lindsay, to activate hope in ways that would be sustainable. If we, the older generations, would actually stop and listen to what they are seeing and what they are saying, then perhaps we could help by supporting them with our experience.
Turn around and help show them, model that behavior to show them how to activate that hope.
So that absolutely.
Turn around and show other people.
Yeah. Although I truly believe when the younger generation activate their hope, Lindsay, they'll go in a different direction to what we did. And that's necessary. That's what gives me hope, is that they actually see another way of being on this planet. And I look forward to the day when they are fully empowered to activate that hope, because I believe that that overall we'll all be better off for it.
Mm, that's just awesome. Kim, you and your passion and your love and the way that you articulate your message is so inspiring to me. I mean, I said to you off air, like, I was having a crazy, ridiculous day and I feel like you ground me. Your calm presence is exactly what I needed today. And I feel like this conversation was exactly what my listeners needed today as well. So thank you so much for your time.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much, Lindsay.
I will talk to you again very soon.
Take care.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of the Hope Motivates Action podcast. I truly believe that the future will be better than today by taking action over the things we can control. And these conversations really show how hope is making a difference in people's lives. If you love this episode or any episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave me a 5-star review. It's these reviews that put my podcast on the radar of others, and I'd love to keep spreading the hope in our communities in this way. You can also find this podcast on all the popular podcast players, as well as on my website at expertinhope.com. And while you're there, check out my membership program. It's called Better Than Today. This is an online membership for the person who's done with not having enough time, money, or energy in their life and is ready to integrate work and life with intention so their future is better than today. Sound like you? Awesome. Love to have you join us, so click the link on my website or in the show notes of this episode today. Speaking of the show notes, you'll find all the links and resources mentioned on this episode, so check that out as well. Again, thank you for your love and support of this podcast, for my work and hope, and your intentional focus on making your future better than today. After all, hope without action is just a wish.